This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
Well, right now I'm kind of cool in the parking lot. It was 97 in my truck, and, you know, I don't like the heat. I hate the heat. Yeah, and if it never got 90 again, I wouldn't care.
Well, it says 91 outside at the moment.
Oh, that's wrong. Your computer's wrong, you know.
It's the top of the line, state of the art.
Hey, my truck is never wrong. Never.
It's always hot.
Yes, it's always 97. That way I don't have to change anything. So I hope you guys, whoever's listening, is in a nice air-conditioned room.
Absolutely.
With your feet up and your notebook and pen out, so
and your phone nearby
so you can call if you have a question about your garden or your landscaping, or should I water, should I not water, when should I water, how should I water, that kind of thing. But anyway, thanks for listening. If you're listening, appreciate it. And if you do have a question, 673-4464 is the number, and we'll get you right in here, 673-4464. And basically, this is a lawn and garden show, and I talk about a whole variety of subjects. And so it's basically to give you hints and ideas for success in your yard and how to keep it alive, and when to prune, how to prune, when to fertilize, how to fertilize, all that kind of stuff. So I've been doing this a few years, so I got her down. I got her down.
Do you? Oh, yeah. Good. All so right.
I started my business in 1973. That's the last century. Okay. for all of you that keep track of time.
I remember that year.
Yeah. Yeah. I was young.
Oh, me too.
I was really young.
I was still in high school.
You were. I was, I think, 23.
Oh, were you?
Yep.
17, 18, but anyway.
Yeah, you're same group.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so last week I was speaking about shrubs and trees that are drought resistant. You know, we're obviously in a drought cycle here, and we have been for the last few years.
Extreme, according to our governor.
Well, yeah, everything's extreme according to our governor. It's been dry. We haven't had the usual rainfall that we've had. This year was a little bit better than most because it rained quite a bit during the spring, and you know, into March and April, and even into May a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see it rain a little bit in August and September, you know, just to kind of cool things off, settle the dust.
Not the thunderstorm rain.
No, just nice, and not Tennessee rain, and not St. Louis rain.
Ow, mama.
Yeah. And I got a grandson right now, went to Tennessee to visit a friend last week.
Uh-oh.
So I don't know how he's been affected or if he's affected.
You haven't heard from him?
Nope, not a word. Mm. And so I might try to call him and see
if
there's any planes taking off, if the runways are still in existence.
The cell phone still works.
Yeah, right. But I was talking about shrubs and trees and that are drought resistant and able to survive with prolonged hot days, which we've had a few of them here. And today I want to expand on my tree list a little bit with the olive tree.
All right.
You know, most folks don't think you can grow olive trees here, but there are a few that you can, and one in particular that I'm going to speak about. It's called the Arbequina olive, or black olive, and these trees love hot, long, hot, dry summers, and it grows quite well here in Oregon. In fact, I think if it was yesterday's news review,
there was
an article about the olive farm up in Glide.
Right, I thought of you when I saw that.
Yeah, and I went, whoa, it's here. I've talked about you several times, man. Why haven't you called me up, for crying out loud?
Yeah, come on down.
But he had a tour there, and Glide is a few degrees on average cooler than we are, but it's still warm enough up there, and his situation is such that his olive farm faces west, for the most part, west by southwest, kind of. I've been to the gate, and I looked at his grove, well, probably 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't see any sign or anything like this. Just ring a bell, come on in, the gate will be open or anything like that. So I didn't go in. I'd love to go in. I'd love to take a tour. I'd love to, you know, just talk to him.
He didn't come down with a shotgun.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. And I was thankful for that.
Yes.
But it's up Lone Rock Road, and maybe a mile and a half up there. There's a few houses up there, but it's up there a ways, but it's in a big flat area right next to the North Umpqua River.
Nice.
And it's a beautiful piece of property, and I just saw his trees at that time. I think, oh gosh, I was not real close. I couldn't stand by him, but they were 8 to 10, maybe 12 feet tall, and very bushy. You could tell that he had pruned them a lot, because when you prune, then the energy goes into fruit production and or whatever. And yeah. I think I read an article about him several years ago where he got his first good olive crop, and he made 720 pints of olive oil.
Oh, wow.
And sold them out immediately, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Wherever. Yeah. So it's a successful operation, and it just proves that you can grow successful olive trees here in Douglas County or Southern Oregon, because they're like I say, hot, dry stuff. And they're a cool tree. They're evergreen. They're pretty. They look good. They got kind of an open look to them if you don't prune them too heavily. Mm. And I've planted several in landscapes just to see, you know, how they would do. And the first one I ever planted in a landscape is now probably 12 feet tall. And it's just kind of, the leaves are kind of a gray-green, thin, pointed leaf. I mean, it's very unusually attractive tree.
Mm.
So
I always had the opposite thought on olive trees.
Well, there are so many varieties, that's, you know, so there's a lot of different shapes and a lot of different leaf sizes and you know, things like that. So I forget, I did some research one time, and oh gosh, there were 50 different varieties or something that I was trying to read about and learn about. So, but anyway, this olive tree that I'm talking about, the Arbequina, is it originated in Catalonia, Spain, and then the common name is the black Spanish olive, and that's in the olives, they come out green, of course, and then in time they start to turn brown, and then when they're real deep brown or light black, if you will, that's when they're harvestable, and that's when you pick them and do that whole
thing.
Yeah, right. And I don't know anything about making olive oil. I'm sure there's a big process. I'm going to do some research on how to make the olive oil, because I've got two of them planted at my house now.
Okay, yeah, the black olive.
Yeah. And see if we can do that. You know, and I first learned about these things about 20 years ago, and because when we were coming back from a trip in California. About mid-California, there's a big olive place, you know, for tourists to pull off and buy olive oil. It's, I think it's called the Olive Farm or something like that. And it was amazing. And then this great big building filled with olive products and different types of olives. And they even had little tiny olive trees for sale. So I bought one. I thought, yeah, this is cool. I'll take it back to Oregon and see how it does. Well, I took it back, and it was still, you know, summer was great, and they're slow growing. They're not real fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had it outside, and I protected it, and I had a little dish, and then we had one of those, oh, gosh, it's going to freeze tonight. Killed her deader than a doornail.
No.
Yeah. So I thought, well, that's not the type I need for here. And then I started doing research on them, and then I found out about the black Spanish olive and how it works here. They grow them up in Portland. They grow them in the Willamette Valley now. It's a new agricultural commodity that's happening here in Oregon. So
you would think it'd be too rainy in Portland.
Well, you'd think, but apparently not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, 20 years ago, I killed my first olive tree.
Mark that on the calendar.
Yeah, mark that on the calendar. And but the things I've learned about it since, it's that was really, really good. And like I said earlier, I planted, once I got the black Spanish olives up here, and I started using them in different landscape projects. Not a lot of them, but just, you know, people have different tastes of trees and things like that. So not everybody wants an olive tree. You know, they're looking for maples, or they're looking for a shade tree, or they're looking for an apple tree. And so, but some people say, hey, yeah, what do you got that's unique, you know, that nobody else has? Well, how about an olive tree? Yeah, what's it do? And, you know, you describe it to them, and they want to try it, so you use it. It's good. In fact, I got a job, I think tomorrow I'm going to be talking to them about you know, different plants and stuff. They want to take out all their lawn, which is huge, and they're in a full sun situation, facing west with a southern exposure as well. So everything in your yard has to be super hardy for the sun. So I'm going to see, and I think they're from California, and so I'm going to talk to them about, hey, would you like some olive trees? Would you like a little baby olive grove? You know, and see what they say.
A little China grove?
Yeah. And, oh, gosh. But my first ones that I grow at the nursery, and we do grow them at the nursery, they're doing well. And like I said, the first one I ever planted in Douglas County in a landscape job, it's about 12, maybe 15 feet tall now.
Wow.
And it's beautiful. But like I say, it's a slow grower. But it's bearing olives, but the birds seem to like them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Get a little BB gun.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't endorse that.
Oh, how about my machine gun? What the hell?
Rapid fire, baby.
but the tree itself has a very open growth. In other words, there's ample room between branches so that the sunlight and the air can circulate through the tree that's what they like. They like that sunlight. So if you got a real thick tree, like I saw up in Glide, his olive crop is probably on the outside branches where the most sunlight is, and you won't find anything in the interior
inside. Because
it never gets any sun.
Ah.
Or if you see them, they'll be dwarfed. They'll be really small. So what are you doing?
We got a phone call.
Okay, got a phone call. All right.
Got a phone call. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike.
Hello.
Are you there, caller? I guess not.
Okay.
Well, we tried.
We'll try again if you have a question, 673-4464. But, you know, they to get them to bear really in the homeowner kind of way, it's to keep them open and so that the sunlight and the air circulation can penetrate. And when it flowers, the flowers are really tiny, and they're kind of whitish with a green tinge to them. And it's not real showy or anything like that, but it looks really good. And if you got that openness into the tree, then you've got more flowers that will actually bear some fruit. So,
speaking of a flower, I don't mean to interrupt here, but how is my vine doing that?
Your vine is doing fine last time I looked, but I've got it protected, so it's not being beat to death with a whole bunch of other stuff. I've kind of put it in with some Japanese maples and kind of didn't cover it up, but I put it close so that nobody would see it or touch it or mess with it.
Well, so it's growing then.
Last time I looked.
All right.
Okay, but we'll see.
Success finally.
We'll
maybe,
see.
Maybe. Well, speaking of success, we got a break here.
Okay. Call if you want.
All righty. Phone number, Mike.
673-4464.
There you go. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240. KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yes, indeedy, we are back.
And we're talking about olive trees. Well, at least I am, so I don't know if anybody else is or even cares. I was in Texas visiting a daughter down there about 4 years ago.
Was it hot?
Not as hot as it is here, for crying out loud.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it was like October.
Oh, okay.
It was warm, but not toasty hot. But we went, and they live out southwest of Austin, about 20, 25 miles in the hill country. And there's houses and lots of ranches. And right down the road from them, a couple miles, is this vineyard. And Vineyard also has a big restaurant, and it's they made a it looks like a castle, made out of rocks and stuff. It's really a cool place. So you're driving down about a quarter of a mile of this Vineyard entry, and then bingo, there's these olive trees. And so they got an olive grove and a vineyard growing in the same location. So it was really cool.
Oh,
so,
neat.
Wow, look at those are olive trees.
Yeah.
And I saw quite a few olive groves in Texas when we drove around. And amazing, they were all linked to vineyards. Yeah. I don't know what the
connection there is.
I don't either, but I guess with wine and there's some olive oil, and you know, who knows?
Yeah, okay. But, maybe somebody will call in and let us know.
Who knows? But the trees I saw, they were about 30 feet tall, maybe 20, 25 feet wide on the branchings, and the trunks were about 2 feet in diameter, and the branches were like real thick, and they're not like straight branches, they're almost look malformed, they're kind of
gnarly
gnarly and twisted and bendy. A real pretty tree, you know. It's different, and it makes a good yard tree or something like that. But as I said in an earlier segment, the olive is the Spanish olive is small. It's dark brown and almost black when it's time to pick. And it is also cultivated commercially in Argentina, Chile, Australia, California, and now in Glide, Oregon.
Yeah, let's hear it.
We're hooked up with the international community in that respect. But, you know, it's I don't know if it's right or not, but the grove planted in Glide is about, they said the article I read had 7,000 trees. I didn't see 7,000 trees, but there's a lot of trees. It's big, and since I didn't go into the place, you know, they may have
more over
over the little hill
or over yonder.
Over yonder. Oh, that's where the good ones are. Okay. And like I said, it's right next to the North Umpqua. It's a beautiful setting. And their first crop, of course, they made 700 pints of olive oil. And so not only can you eat the olives, but they make that quality olive oil, and it's, you know, really cool. And the tree is self-fertile. It doesn't need you can plant one and still have an olive crop because it's self-pollinating, self-fertile.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so cool. all you need is a couple of bees to do their thing back and forth between the flowers, and you get what you
get
need.
Egg roll.
Yeah, 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 right. And these things begin fruiting at an early age. Like one at home I have, it might be 4 feet tall. It's got olives on it. It's really, really cute. And then I got another one that's, probably 2 feet tall. We haven't really planted it in the ground yet. It's still in a pot. And there's a couple of little olives on that. They're very small, you know. I mean, it's not nothing you're going to make a pint of olive oil on. That's for sure. Yeah. But the arbequina is also the primary olive tree grown in California and Florida. So both of those states are on the, they're not in the baby stage, but they're the next step up as far as olive production.
Nice.
Yeah. So now, if you want to use them in landscaping, don't plant them in a lawn or near a sidewalk because the fruit can stain the concrete.
Uh-oh.
You know, it drops off. It's black, baby, and you can't get it off. I mean, you could probably scrub it with cleanser and stuff. Then you'd have a big white spot in the middle of your concrete sidewalk or something like that. So keep them away from sidewalks. And, of course, in a lawn, that'll be too wet, and they may not survive. Just remember, they like it hot and dry. And
me too.
Yeah, that's you and Kyle. I'll tell you, I don't like it hot and dry. I like it cool, 75 to 80 degrees with sunshine. That is my perfect thing.
Well, you gonna retire in Hawaii then?
No, I'll retire out in my canyon and sit there and enjoy those trees. I got lots of trees.
There you go.
Yeah, but you know, that's a tree that it just needs very little care. It's just a tough tree, and once it's started, and what we do, how we propagate baby olive trees is, mm-hmm. my daughter Jill goes and makes cuttings in the winter, and then we put them in a flat, and we have heat beds that promote root growth.
Yeah.
And they grow little roots. Then we put them in a little 4-inch pot for a year, and then they fill that out. Then we put them in a gallon can for a year, maybe two, and then they fill that out, and then you put them in the next size, and, you know, they continue to grow. I wouldn't say fast growth mode by the time they get into the big 5-gallon pots, but they're more than moderate, but not quite fast.
Kind of teenagers.
Teenagers. Right, a teenage olive tree. That's what I want. I heard about it on your show. I want that. Oh golly, but they can grow anywhere that's sunny with good drainage. So that's what you want to do, and actually. It grows all over southern Oregon on steep, dry hills.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It's been planted, but they do it so that it has no water problem. In other words, if it's on a hill, it's got good drainage. The water's not going to sit around the tree and rot the roots.
And drown it.
Yeah. And it's the problem with this tree, the only problem that I see, and it might be better in the future, it's hard to find, and very few nurseries grow them. I'm one of the few nurseries that grow them, and I don't have a big bunch of them. I might have 30 saleable olive trees at this time.
Well, that's quite a few.
But they're small. They're in like gallon cans and stuff, and they're maybe 2 feet tall. So, you know, it's a small tree, but it's got its start. It's got its start, and it's got a good root system. And I don't know if I mentioned it, but it is evergreen. It does not lose its leaves in the winter. And so you've got a tree that's looking good. And the trees, the leaves will drop, but they don't all drop at once. You know, it's like maybe a two-year-old tree, a two-year-old leaf finally gives it up, and a couple of leaves will fall off. And then there are younger leaves right behind that one that kind of fill the spot, if you will.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a messy tree, and in if you have a backyard or a front yard that it's very sunny and you've got great drainage, or if you don't have great drainage, build a mound so you create drainage and you can put it in there. And then everybody in the neighborhood said, "That is a cool tree. Where'd you get that? What is that?" You know. So and then, you know, I got this at Wintergreen.
Yeah, he showed me how to do it.
Yeah. Right. Oh gosh. But it's an up-and-coming industry here in Oregon. I think that in the next decade or so, you'll see more and more agricultural land, and, you know, from Portland south into maybe even to Northern California. And the cold doesn't seem to bother them either.
Who would have thought an olive tree in Oregon?
The first one I tried didn't make it, and so I knew that's wrong kind of olive tree, man. But and like I said, it's evergreen, and it's the reddish, kind of a reddish brown bark in time. And the leaves
kind of like a madrone.
Not quite like a madrone, but depends on its location, because I've seen the younger ones have more of a gray green bark.
Oh, okay.
And the older they get, I guess the older bark turns a darker color. So I'm sure that has to do with the location as well,
showing its age.
Yeah, and you know, I've been. In all these years that I've been landscaping, only one client has requested one for their yard. Only one. Because they must have read an article on it somewhere and said, well, okay. Oh, geez. But
do they want it planted right next to the sidewalk?
No, gosh, no. So, the olive trees are cool. Now, the other dry tree that's native to our area, of course, is a... madrone.
We've
got madrones everywhere.
I like madrones.
I do too. They're a gorgeous tree. Mm-hmm. And they are, they grow in the hardest, rockiest, ugliest ground you ever saw, on steep hills, on cliffs, and everything else.
Like,
you know?
Yeah, you're right. They grow anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah. I had a client one year that and it's up in a Sutherland mobile home park. No, not a mobile home park, but it was in a by the golf course.
Yeah.
There. And she, and we were going over what she wanted and plants. She said, "And could I get a madrone?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I'd have to call around because you don't see madrones in nurseries.
They just kind of do their own thing."
Yeah, and all the nurseries I've gone to over the years, I've not seen madrone trees.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in my big nursery catalog, and you know they have a listing of Joe Blow Nursery, and it has this, and I found one in Salem.
Oh.
That grew madrones, and I thought, huh? So I called them up. And I said, "You know, you got madrones, yeah?" I said, "What? Well, they're in a big tub, and they're, I got them this size, a fairly expensive tree, you know, because it takes a long time to get them up to any size."
Right.
Yeah. And so I called the lady back and told her, and she said, "Oh, yeah, I want it." So I drove up to Salem early one morning in my big truck and found that nursery. It wasn't too far off I-5, thankfully. And he had quite a few of them. Well, you know, I saw maybe 20 of them, and they were all different sizes, and I picked out one that was in the price range of what I quoted her, brought it back, and I thought, man, I hope this thing works, because it's in a development, and she's got a sprinkler system in her yard already.
And they don't like a whole lot of water.
No. And I was trying to figure out a way. So I just built this horrendous mound. It was probably, you know, in the middle, maybe 4 feet tall. And then we sloped it down, and it was a fairly good size, and we planted it in the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, "Don't mess with it. Leave it alone. Don't water it.
It'll do its own thing."
It'll do its own thing, right. But it was beautiful. And I went back. She called me back, I think 2 years later, and wanted us to do a little bit more work. So I found her place again, and that madrone was beautiful. It was doing a great, great job. So you can grow them successfully in your yard if you don't water them to death and make sure they got good drainage and a lot of sunlight. Because that one was in full sun facing west, and there was no blocking the sun until it went down. I mean, it was the perfect spot for a madrone.
Cool.
You know.
Speaking of cool, we got to take a break.
We got to take a break. Okay.
All right. 4:35. We'll be right back. And the phone number there, Mr. Winter.
673-4464. Call me.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, still looking at 90 degrees there, Mike.
Oh, I think your machine's wrong, but that's okay. I don't care.
Let me refresh it.
Yeah, right.
Let's see what. 91.
Yeah, right. It's 99 right now in the parking lot.
Well, we still have a phone line or two open for you.
Yeah, well, 300 feet from where I'm speaking is 99, okay? All right. But anyway, I was talking about madrones and,
yes, sir.
You know, how hardy and drought resistant those puppies are.
Oh, gosh.
And I got them all over my place, up on the hills and stuff like that. And I've got two madrones that are huge. They must be 500 years old, I swear. Their trunks are about 6 feet in diameter.
Mama mia.
Yeah, and they're on this slope, and we discovered them. We were climbing up, my wife and I years ago were hiking up through the woods, and bingo, there it was, and it had this really low branch, and about 3 feet, 4 feet off the ground, and the branch itself was probably a good 2 feet in diameter.
Jeez.
Easy. And so we sat in that branch for a while and watched things, you know, and it was just cool. And it was on a very steep slope, and I thought, how in the world can these things live up here and get this old? I mean, it had to be 400 or 500 years old. I don't know. You can get an increment borer, which you can drill into the tree and then pull it back out and then count the rings.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. But I didn't have one handy, so I didn't do it. And it would take a big one to get to the center of the tree.
Wow.
You know, it was like I said, 5 feet in diameter, maybe.
Do you ever see any small madrones growing in the wild?
Oh, yeah. They're all over the
place.
Are
they? Yeah. I don't believe I have ever...
And I've tried to transplant them,
yeah.
and not one of them lived.
Huh.
Not one.
Odd.
Yeah, and maybe it was, I don't know if I didn't get enough root or I put them in the wrong kind of soil. I should have probably just put pure clay or rocks in there and they would have done fine.
Done fine. Yeah.
But I put them in, potting soil.
Oh, no.
And they probably got too much water. So I'm going to try it again. I'm going to try it. I keep trying different things and
right.
see how did I mess this one up, and do the opposite the next time and maybe get some success there. But
you hate to cut them down, but they make good firewood.
Oh, they're the best firewood in the
world.
Oh,
yeah, yes.
Well, I don't have to cut many of them down because in Snowmageddon I had a bunch of the younger ones, crash and crash and burn. So I'm waiting until fire season's over and I'll go up there with my chainsaw and tractor and cut a bunch and bring them on down to my shop.
Nothing like that for wood.
Oh,
I
man,
tell you.
They last all night. You just load that thing up before bed and pull the drafts closed, and you get up in the morning and it's hotter.
Still
than,
there.
Yep, yep. Hotter than what you want.
I don't know why they don't make charcoals out of that. For
maybe they do.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know. But it grows all over southern Oregon. Like I say, you can go down to Grants Pass, Medford on the I-5 corridor and see just thousands of them. But it's interesting as you go north to you can see some on the way to Eugene, but once you get past Eugene, you're in the Willamette Valley, flat and rainy and wet, and you don't see too many up there. But if you get off I-5, there's a few nurseries I go east when you get to Salem. I go out Highway 22 about 19-20 miles. There's a couple of big nurseries. They grow seedlings out there, and then you begin to see them again, not as much as we have here in southern Oregon, but there's a few old ones, old growth madrones hanging around out there.
Yeah.
So but I've not, other than that one nursery that grew them, I didn't see any other nurseries that grew them. So it's kind of a it's like the olive tree. It hates water. it loves the sun. It loves the heat.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Because why spend a whole bunch of money watering a tree that dies? Okay. But like I said, it's hard to find. I'm gonna do some more research here when I have some time about maybe there are some other nurseries growing them now. I'd like to have a few for sale, but I'd have to make sure that I stuck them with the sprinklers didn't hit them, and put them in pure soil rather than a potting soil. So, but the leaves are pretty. See, the bark is reddish brown, and reddish brown. I guess it would be the best description of it. But the leaves are about 6 inches long and about 2 to 3 inches wide. And they're kind of a stiff leaf. They've got some body to them, and the leaves are kind of shiny too, kind of a shiny green. They're a pretty tree, and the branching patterns, of course, are twisty and gnarly, and looks like something that came out of Jurassic Park, for crying out loud.
Ancient China.
Yeah, the dry part of Jurassic Park, anyway. and the older the tree, the twistier the branches are, and. Like I said, in the Snowmageddon, I had a few break apart and some even come out by the root, but usually they have a fairly deep root system. Mm. And like I said earlier, in all the years that I've been landscaping, only that one client has asked for one.
That's and it has survived.
And last time I saw it, it was looking good. It was looking healthy. It was saying, "Whoa, I like this. The living is easy here in this subdivision, boy."
Yeah, I like southern.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful tree all year long, and it does have flowers. It has small clusters of white flowers in the spring, and they're kind of white to kind of pinkish, and then these flowers, as they drop off, they turn into red orange berries in the fall.
Oh.
And when you look at I've already started seeing some berries on some of my madrone, but as you get into September and October, they really become prevalent. I mean, you go, whoa, look at that. It's like it's been decorated with these red round berries all through it.
And that's not the seed, is it?
Yeah, that's the seed.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
I've never tried to germinate the seed. And I'm going to try that. But I don't know, I can't find any information on how to do that
yet.
So
Call Mother Nature.
I'll get my, put it in an old dry sand and see what happens. But if you like a hardy tree and you don't want to water a whole bunch, well, the madrone, the olive tree, that's two of them that are unique, not many around, and they're tougher than nails.
They last forever.
Yeah, yeah. So one thing I found, and I don't even know if I'll get through this whole segment that I wrote. I got 3 pages of notes here.
You got about 5 minutes.
5 minutes and I'm done?
No, in this segment.
Okay. I've found over my many years of installing lawns that they are high maintenance part of your landscape. That's all there is to it. There's no other way to describe it. If you want it green and you want it lush and you want it growing, it's high maintenance, period, bottom line. They require regular watering, regular fertilizing to stay green and healthy. That's all there is to it, especially this time of year. Then you got to mow them every week, for crying out loud. And even when you treat, and there might be some weeds in there, and you go ahead and treat it with the newest weed killer that won't kill your lawn but will kill the weeds, well, maybe there's a 40% kill on the weeds, but there's some that just don't just succumb. And anyway, lawns are a spendy and time-consuming operation. That's all there is to it.
Oh, you betcha.
You know, a nice one. You can plant
grass. It's a good
hobby. I got grass at my place. It was a lawn at one time when I first put it in.
Yeah.
But I don't water it. Ah. And it turns, it's brown except for the clover. And I'm going to speak about clover here in a minute.
Oh.
But it's brown, but it's still growing. And I've got wildflowers, yellow wildflowers growing in the thing. And I'll go out there every couple of weeks with my riding mower and mow them to the ground. And it looks neat and clean. It's still brown, but it's neat and clean. And then the next thing I know, a month goes by and there's There's those yellow flowers are back up. It's like there's a billion of them. Did we have a call?
Yeah, somebody keeps trying to call in, but
what's happening, man?
I don't know.
Your machinery broke, huh?
Well, I don't think so, but I don't know.
So, you know,
how'd you like my Southern accent?
That was good. That was good. You sounded like Nancy Pelosi.
Oh.
When we as a company install a new sod lawn, it's a beautiful sight. I mean, it looks good. It's weed free. It's a deep lush green, and we make sure that the homeowner knows exactly what to do. Step one, step two, step three. How much, when to do it, all that kind of stuff. I want it to be successful.
Sure.
And I do drive bys. I always do drive bys. You know, a couple weeks later, or a couple weeks after that. And if I see something wrong, I'll stop and talk to them. You know,
or set them on the right path.
Right. And if they're not home, I'll call them.
Well, there you go.
You
will not be deterred.
I will not be deterred. You know, you spent a lot of money on that puppy.
Yeah.
Now let's keep it nice, okay? But the problem is weeds seem to find their way in regardless of what you do. And you can keep the weeds at a minimum, but it doesn't seem like you can totally eliminate them.
Yeah.
And that's irritating. And
that stinks.
You know, and you got weed and feed, and you got this, and you got that. Well, you can take all for all I'm, you know, weed and feed, you might as well dump it in the ocean for all the good that it does. I've tried it numbers of times, and it does a partial job only. And
if
you overdo it, you're gonna hurt your lawn, and you know it's kind of a thing. So it's different. It's hard. And, you know, to keep it weed-free, you're not going to be 100% on that. So what are your alternatives? Okay, don't put in a lawn. Put in shrubs, put in trees, put in ground covers, and a lot of bark mulch is less expensive and a whole lot less work and time-consuming. You know, it's just easy. And perhaps a fake lawn, you know, like
there you go.
Artificial turf.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's and they're always green, and there's no mowing, no watering, no fertilizing.
That they wear out.
In time they will. Now, if you've been to Legion Field, watch any of the games there. We put in one. I don't know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
That's fake grass over there.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my brother and I used to do all the maintenance at Legion Field when the real lawn was there.
Yeah.
And then somehow we got a grant or whatever, and tore it all out. And this outfit, I think they said they were from Colorado, that came, bid the job, and got the job, and came from Colorado and put in a brand new fake lawn.
Nice.
Still looks good.
Still, well, right.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what our governor has done today?
What? This is not a political show, you know.
I know, but this is kind of a good thing.
Okay.
The governor has ordered flags lowered to honor the member of Congress, the lady that was in that horrible
accident.
More on that at the top of the hour. Right now, let's take a break on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
Yes, see you later.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, summer afternoon, and we're still waiting for you to call us. What's the number, Mike?
673-4464, and we got, what, 7-8 minutes?
Yep.
Well, yeah, okay. So, anyway, you're probably too enthralled from everything I've said, and you just can't ask the question. That's okay. I understand.
Absolutely.
But I'm talking about lawns and the way and the expense and the work that is necessary to keep a lawn good and green, the chemicals that you have to use, the fertilizer, etc., and the water that you got to pump into it from about June to September here in Douglas County, because you say 91, I say 97 degrees out there, and that lawn sits there, and I've said this before 100 times, people mow the lawns too short, leave them long, they stay cooler, they stay greener, they stay less weeds, but, you know, try half your lawn scalping like you usually do, and the other half leave it long, see which one looks better. Don't take my word for it. Do it.
Do an experiment.
But at any rate, like I said, shrubs, trees, ground covers, things like that. Bark mulch, a lot less expensive, less time consuming. It's an alternative, and it can be beautiful. Or perhaps the fake lawn, you know, like the AstroTurf or whatever you want to call it. It's always green. There's no mowing. There's no watering. There's no fertilizing. But here's a... fake lawns are very expensive to install. They ain't cheap at all. You can't install it on soil. You need to excavate the soil to a depth of, say, 6 inches and put compacted gravel in there and actually compact it so it doesn't move around. Mm. And then there's some kind of a special, I don't know if it's a type of sand or what, you put on top of the gravel, not too much of it. I've never installed one. I've just seen one. I saw the one at Legion Field going in, and I saw Dallas Hurd puts them in. And, it's, like I say, very expensive. But you get them smooth and level, and they stay that way. when you lay the AstroTurf, it's there. If you've done the proper preparation, initial prep, it's okay. And if installed correctly, it's going to look good for many years. Now, Clint Newell had that done up there at his car place on the corner of Garden Valley and Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe not that long ago. But I watched that operation for a while. It took them quite a while to put that thing together. First, they had to excavate all the dirt. Not all the dirt, but, you know, 6 inches
of it.
Yeah, and then put hard material in there because otherwise it's not smooth. And then I watched them put it in. And it's a little faded now, but it's in a hot, hot place.
It is.
Out there all day long.
It's always beaten down on it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it looks okay, but, of course, there's no maintenance involved. Other than, I guess, when you could go hose it off when dust gets on it or something like that. It's okay, that's good.
Brighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of on a little slope, so it's okay. But there is a more natural alternative, and this natural alternative, and I'll probably have to speak on this next week.
You still got about 3 minutes.
Well, I got 3 pages of notes here, buddy. the natural grass, native grass, perennial rye with a clover mix is pretty good. And I did that at my house for several reasons years and years ago. I just wanted to test it. And after we built it and we moved in and we sat there and I got her all tilled and smooth and everything, and then I put perennial rye and clover in the same spot, and it was, oh gosh, end of September, first of October, and the rains began, and they I didn't have to water it. I didn't have to do anything to it. I did throw some fertilizer on it, and just to see what happened. It came in beautiful. It was green. It was gorgeous. It looked great, and the clover was kind of spotty. It was there because I didn't put a lot of clover seed on there because it's really expensive, and so it was here and there. Well, now 20 whatever years later. The clover is almost the major item. And the thing about the clover, it stays green. It doesn't need any water. It doesn't need any fertilizer. And I mow every 2 weeks, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and then I was reading a whole thing about clover, and then I related it to what I have, and I see how it's taken over. It does. It spreads. It takes over. It does, and it's a whole lot less work than a regular lawn.
It's cool, I think.
Yes,
cooler.
Yes. Yes. And it spreads by rooting. Just roots itself in different places.
Yeah.
And in my lawn, I've got these yellow wildflowers. Lawn, it's grass. I've got these yellow wildflowers that come up.
Yeah.
And there must be a million of them out there. I mean, it's just right now. It's my whole yard is bright yellow, and it's probably a quarter of an acre. You know, the front yard.
That's a lot of yellow.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Sure. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then when I cut it. Not short, but, you know, fairly short. Yeah. And it's kind of brownish because I don't water. And then within probably a week, more of those little yellow flowers come back. And I don't know.
Oh, you can't kill them.
No, I can't. I don't want to. It's pretty. it's what. And I get out of my riding Kubota mower and just go for it. And bingo.
They'll cool. come right back.
Exactly.
All right, speaking of coming right back, we'll see you next Wednesday.
Yeah, and I'll tell you more about the clover and perennial rye mix, too. I'll be more detailed on that. So thanks for listening. Save your questions till next week. Too late now.
Sounds good. The Afternoon Report is coming up.